And now, the continuing adventures of Superhero Speak, episode 21.
21? We're old enough to drink. Couple quick announcements. If you haven't checked out the website in a while, please do, because we're now doing comic book reviews right there on the website. Our good friends at Cinescope have been kind enough to send us advanced copies of some of their books, and that's where we're reviewing them. Superheroespeak.com. Also, a quick shout out to our friends at nerdunemployed.com. They're now doing an online magazine that coincides with their podcast, and it's pretty cool. There's some articles in there, stuff they don't cover directly in the podcast, and I think people should check it out. And finally, a shout out to my brother Ed, who is on a podcast called Geeksters. You can find them at wordswithgeeks.com. But the really cool thing is, you can also hear them live every Sunday, 7 to 10, on aquanetradio.com. It's pretty cool. The guys are really funny, and I think you should check the podcast out. Now, finally, this episode is Ben, John, and I, or as we like to call Ben, the Beard of Knowledge. And we sit down, we talk about some different things. One of the things we start talking about this week is John's obsession with My Little Pony, and he is now writing fan fiction called 50 Shades of Rainbow I don't know. Anyway, just sit back, listen, and enjoy. Here we go.
Hello.
Hello.
I had it on mute.
That would make a difference. First rule of microphones and headphones.
Really? That's the first rule?
That's the first rule you need to know.
I thought the first rule is don't start a podcast.
Yeah. Go ahead, try and pull that one off.
Is it too late
once
for that?
Once you're in, there's no way out.
I've noticed that.
As much as you try to ignore it,
I was waiting out. Yeah, I was waiting to walk out my door and see skywriting, you know, or have a carrier pigeon hit the front of my house or something.
You never had to say yes. It was many months ago.
And we don't let you say no.
Right. Once you say yes the first time, then you're done.
Well, at least I got some writing done.
And what are you rating? The Great American Novel?
Yeah, sure. Because, you know, geeks are so well known for that.
Yes, quite.
Well, I think, what's his name? The guy who writes the Game of Thrones. He's a pretty well-known geek. What's his name?
George R. R. Martin.
That's it, yes.
So fine. Fred. Fine, I'll level with you. It's My Little Pony fanfic, okay?
That will sell well.
I know.
Well, at least all the bronies will buy it.
50 Shades of Rainbow Dash. Oh.
That's perfect.
That's terrible.
So the only information, only interesting news article I found was Bryan Cranston finally came out and said, yeah, he's not Lex Luthor.
Ah. Sigh of relief there. Yeah. No, it's, you know, I could have gone either way on that, honestly. I just, when you'd throwing that out there, I completely had not even heard about that, so I didn't really have time to mentally process it, and it didn't quite click in my head. And again, I think it's still the holding out hope from Michael Rosenbaum, but we'll see.
Yes, I tweeted that, actually.
Yeah.
I said, oh, there's still hope for Rosenbaum.
Nice. So, actually, there's a number of things that I've heard recently that we could discuss. Obviously, that one's, the Bryan Cranston one, is a bit out, since it is confirmed not to be true. Or is it?
You nerd.
But, yeah, there's a number of things that I've read recently that we can discuss. Maybe not at length, but at least we can bring up. For instance, have you heard, are we officially on right now?
Well, we're always recording when I'm on.
I know. I just wasn't sure if we wanted to include what we've said so far as part of the episode.
Well, always.
Shall we do a start?
All right.
I don't even know what we're talking about, but that's fine. I'll find something.
I don't know what we're talking about either. Ben's going to lead the charge this week.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. You know what? I might actually have something to do. I think I should go.
No.
I have to go watch, you know, the My Little Pony Equestria Girls movie for the second time.
Did you see it? Was that any good? My kids want to see that.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Somebody like me, who's not a brony, but, you know, has an appreciation for such things.
Whatever helps you sleep at night.
Just keep digging that deeper and deeper.
All right, well, we can just do the intro, and then we can continue to discuss this.
Okay. So, I don't really have any anecdotes right now, because my kids have been boring lately, but they do start school tomorrow, which is exciting. And I'm sure there will be some interesting discussion from that. But we did go see Percy Jackson's Sea of Monsters yesterday in the theaters, which was interesting. I wasn't sure if my son would sit through it, being that he's six. But he actually, there was a couple of spots where he was scared, but he really enjoyed it and was like up clapping and cheering at the end. So, I think that's...
Clapping and cheering?
Yeah.
The books weren't that great.
He's six. Oh. There was action and monsters, and the heroes won at the end.
I know, but the heroes are already like 30. I mean, you know.
Wait, hold on. The heroes won at the end? Shouldn't you say spoiler alert?
Yeah, sure, right.
Sure. I don't know how many people in our audience actually care about Percy Jackson.
I think they all care deeply about Percy Jackson.
Although, a thing occurred to me yesterday, and this could be part of our opener. So, we were... Jacob was getting ready to go to bed, and he was apparently dubbing everyone, giving everyone nicknames as he was lying in his room. My wife was Mother Nature. And because he couldn't think of an equivalent to that for the opposite for my role, I was the Dragon of New York.
Okay.
But I explained to him that there is a Father Time. You know, that's sort of the... I guess the closest thing to an equivalent to Mother Nature, that other role. But it occurred to me, so the father of all of the Titans, the father of all of the gods in Greek mythology, was Cronos.
Cronos, yep.
Which basically it interprets to time. And the mother goddess in that same mythology was Gaia, which is Earth and represents nature. Do you think, is that a loose association or is that a direct correlation? Like, was that derivative?
The name Gaia, or...
No, I mean, the fact that the originating god and goddess in Greek mythology was
basically god, time and space?
Basically time and nature. Is it coincidence that there are these caricatures of Mother Nature and Father Time, or are those derivative of Greek mythology?
Oh, no, they're probably definitely derivative of Greek mythology. Okay. The Greek mythology, it influenced... A lot of stuff, sure. Mostly through Homer, but...
Sure.
Yeah. I'd say it definitely is, you know... I'm not sure... I think Father Time might have originated with the Norwegian mythology, though. But
okay.
That was influenced by Greek, so...
Yeah.
Right. I mean, a lot of things come from the Greeks, though. I mean, they were the original society, you know. All their history remained, and, you know, I'm sure all these stories were passed down generation to generation, you know... Nothing's original.
Yeah. Well, the Romans just, you know, snarfed it all up and changed all the names to protect the innocent. Yeah.
Sort of like my college papers.
Ah. That explains so much.
Nice.
It's interesting you bring up Cronos, though. Because he happens to be the main villain in a new comic from Xenoscope.
Is it now?
Yes. Realm Knights. Have you?
Yes, I did actually read that. Yes, I read that.
Yeah. Is this an enemy called Cronos, or is this the actual Titan Cronos?
It's the actual Titan Cronos. Long after he's had been defeated, coming into a corporeal form and trying to retake his scythes and, take over the world or whatever.
Is Marvel going to sue them now?
I don't know if they have that power. It's Greek mythology. What are you going to do? I mean, honestly... That sort of was the same story as in Percy Jackson's Sea of Monsters. So I don't think anyone really can say that they hold any of that sacred. You know, it's too open, too ancient.
Oh, yeah, no, I know that. It's just that it seems like Marvel has a lock on, you know, the Greek mythology entering into their superhero universe.
True, they do have Hercules, and a number of the others have been represented from time to time. But I would not say that they have any sort of stronghold there. It's again, it's mythology that goes too far back. It predates, you know, copyright and trademark.
I mean, it's one of the reasons all those original Disney movies were old fairy tales, because, you know, they weren't in copyright, so they were up for grabs. So Disney's like, oh, Sleeping Beauty.
Yeah, licensing was open.
Right.
But yeah, and along those lines, that's another thing that the Realm Knights... So, let's talk about this real quick. At least two of us have read it, right?
Yes.
Hey,
reviews posted on our website.
Yes. So, I read it yesterday, and I have to say I was impressed. I'll say I was not hugely as huge a fan of the Grimm fairy tales line itself, but it could just be the non sequitur of it that I was jumping into it in issue 88 or whatever.
Right.
That there's a lot of story built before that, so it felt disjointed. But I guess any comic probably would if you just jumped into a random issue, you know, nearly 100 issues in.
Right.
But Realm Knights, it was issue 1, and it was really interesting, and what I liked about it is they're pulling all these characters that I assume that they've introduced before through the Grimm Fairy Tales series, but they're introducing them, you know, well enough that if you're just jumping into this, you're not going to feel out of place. You know, it's they're setting them up clearly enough for any audience to sort of roll with it and not feel lost. What's interesting about it is basically they're taking these fairy tale characters and assembling them into an Avengers-like team. It's, you know, very akin to League of Extraordinary Gentlemen kind of setup. But, you know, this is with... They have Robin of Loxley, a female version. They have Hook, which I find interesting, because basically Hook, I assume, is sort of like a Captain Hook derivative. But instead of having a hook for a hand, he has this, like, magical arm cannon. That's kind of interesting. And there's Red Riding Hood and Snow White and a female Van Helsing character.
Yeah, Liziel? L-I-E-S-L.
Looks like it's Diesel with an L, essentially. I don't know how you pronounce it, though. But, and I think it's interesting, and it's definitely something I could see myself following. The only critique I would have of it is, and I think it's akin to the Grimm Fairy Tale series in general, is they're definitely catering to an audience like us. And
middle-aged male nerds?
I think so. Because there's, first of all, the fact that they gender bent a number of characters, and everyone, you know, every female character is wearing tight, somewhat revealing outfits, you know, very perfect forms, and all that sort of thing. They're definitely following that, you know, traditional trope of comic artistry.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah, but I mean, that seems to be just...
It's pervasive. It's fairly standard fare.
Right. I mean, to talk about the book itself a little bit. I mean, yeah, it definitely felt a la the Ultimates, you know, in the sense of it was a government agency putting the team together.
Right.
And they're definitely established characters within their universe. Right. So it's, you know, again, so that in that respect, it's also like. Justice League, you know?
Yeah.
But you're right. They did a great job of, like, introducing the characters. And then I also like, they kind of also quickly let you know kind of what role they were going to play within the team.
Yeah.
You know, where I think, like, Van Helsing, they're kind of making her the brains a little bit of the team. You know, they call her the hunter, but, like, she's the inventor. She's the one that's making all these gadgets, so she's probably going to make, my guess is she's going to be the comes up with the invention that helps defeat Kronos at the end, you know?
Perhaps.
Or helps them out in some way, you know? And then...
Although she's kind of only along for the ride. Like, she was sort of just a package deal with Agent Snow, as they call her.
Right. But I kind of think, you know, they're not going to include her in a team book to just be there.
Yeah.
And, And yeah, Hook, they kind of made him the roguish knight in a way, where it's like...
Yeah, he's sort of the ladies' man, you know, what you'd expect sort of a pirate captain-ish type character to be, honestly.
Right, he's the typical guy stuck with these four hot chicks and brings the male perspective to the team.
Yeah, or a male perspective to the team.
A male, yes. and then, of course, they had tension between Robin Hood and Red.
Yeah.
You know, because Robin's the loose cannon, because something happened in her books where she was in jail and they broke her out to be on this team, you know, which was kind of a cool thing. But, you know, they're establishing tension within the team, you know.
Yeah.
So it's not just, oh, let's put these superheroes together and have them fight the bad guy and have all these cool panels of them fighting. It was, let's also have a decent story behind it, you know,
yeah.
Which I really appreciated that.
True.
So... Yeah, it's a good book. I think anyone listening to this podcast should run out and get it. I think our co-host should spend some time coming up reading it.
Whomever could you be talking about?
Oh, I don't know. The one who didn't read it yet.
Is that the one that also can't take hints? Because, you know, you might have to be a little bit more explicit there, really.
Possibly.
We'll give you another hint. His name starts with a J.
Uh-huh.
And it rhymes with get on with it.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, but so yeah, I definitely agree that it was a good read. I enjoyed it. I did read a couple other of those titles as well. And they were pretty interesting. The Oz one was an interesting reinterpretation of the story of Wizard of Oz. Again, taking it up to a more mature level.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to say because it's not overly sexual, the books, but at the same time, they're not for kids, I don't
think. No, they are not. I would not let my kids read those. They're a little bit above them.
Yeah. You know, maybe John can recommend some My Little Pony books for them.
There aren't any books on those yet.
Oh.
You have to wait for the fan fiction.
There are My Little Pony comics.
They're probably are they the for the new ones or?
Yeah, they're Friendship is Magic.
Oh, good
comics. Hmm. My daughter picked up a couple at Midtown Comics when we were in New York, so they are out there.
Uh-huh.
I wonder if the writing is as good. There's so many things that they're sticking into those cartoons. I mean,
yeah.
Like there is one that was kind of a homage to the Screw Attack death battle scene with Rainbow Dash versus the Transformer. Starscream. Yeah, they had one of the ponies actually make a Transformer sound as she unscrunched herself. And then Then there was another one that they did that harkens back to the old, let's see, what was it, Pepe Le Pew cartoons? They had Pinkie Pie going after Rainbow Dash, and she was doing the whole Pepe Le Pew, you know, hop, hop,
bouncing,
hop,
yeah.
with Rainbow Dash trying as fast as she can to get away.
Yeah.
There are
a lot of interesting plot points to that, and they also borrow a lot of stories for different things. Like, for instance, I think I may have mentioned this before in conversation, at least. They had the essentially the equivalent to the Trouble with Tribbles, with those little, you know, self-replicating things, whatever they were. I can't recall.
I haven't seen that one yet.
Oh, that's an interesting one.
Yeah, but it's nice that they pay respects to, you know, sci-fi and a lot of the older cartoons. It's really cool, and that's the kind of stuff that. Yes, a guy like me can get while my daughter is sitting there and looking at the, you know, the more simple plotline stuff.
Right. By the way, Mr. Markowski, you might actually, as a Star Trek fan, you might appreciate that there's this character that they introduce that shows up a couple times called Discord, which is this sort of weird dragon-type character. But he's voiced by, I can't think of the actor's name right now, but the same guy who did Q from the Next Generation.
John DeLancey.
John DeLancey, yes. And it's actually, I think it's a really clever character that, he created there as well. Like, he plays the part well.
Oh, of course. He's awesome.
Oh, yes, he is.
And you know he's from Philadelphia.
Well, then why isn't he on our show?
I was going to say, you're slacking, man.
All right, he'll be our next guest.
How's that sound?
Well, he's not, I mean, what has he done for comic books? And, you know, he hasn't been any of the comic book movies.
No, he hasn't so far. You're true. That's right.
That's actually kind of weird. You'd think that he'd be on the in the stable for that kind of thing.
Yeah, he's a Trek person. I think he's sort of in that pigeonhole. But I'm sure that he would be up for it if they found a way to fit him into a role somewhere.
I mean, you can argue there are Star Trek comics, so...
Sure, but I don't think they need much voice work for those. Last I checked.
No, but I'm saying you'd sit there and say, well, since there are Star Trek comics mm-hmm. that featured Q,
he has
a relationship to comic books that way.
And you've read how many of those?
A couple, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I actually have Star Trek comics in my collection.
Fair enough. Well, anyway, getting back onto the topic of superhero-related things.
Oh, yes. Rainbow Dash is a superhero? Sorry. After you.
There has been a couple pieces of news related to the next Avengers movie, The Age of Ultron. Some of which are pretty firm. Some casting things that have been set, I think set in stone. And then a bunch of rumors as well. One of those casting things that was put out recently is they've cast a voice actor for the part of Ultron in the form of James Spader.
Oh, ooh, for those of you that don't know, that is the old stomping grounds of Stargate.
He was in the original Stargate movie, not in the show.
Yeah, yep.
But yeah, he was in the original Stargate movie as the, I can't think of that character's name, the one with the glasses, the scientist.
The one with the glasses.
Hey, well, if you know his name, you can say his name. That's what I thought.
I'm trying to remember. That's not cool. I can't remember.
There are ways to look these things up.
I know, but damn it. I should know that off the top of my head. I'm a huge Stargate fan until they destroyed it.
Yes.
Stargate Universe. Ugh! But
I'm on his page right now.
Daniel Jackson, right.
Yeah, Daniel Jackson. But he's done a lot of things. He's, you know, originally known for like movies in the 80s. Such as Pretty in Pink and Mannequin and things like that. Yeah, obviously he was in Stargate.
That's right, he was in Mannequin.
Yes.
Was he in, really? He was in, wow. I don't remember that. What was he yet?
It was a small part. It says Richards. I don't know who Richards is, but he was in that. And more recently he had a stint on that legal show? Boston Legal.
Yeah.
Oh, in The Office. He was in The Office in one of the more recent seasons as Robert California, which I don't know if you guys watched that show, but I think he was a funny character on that.
Nope, haven't seen it.
You're lost.
Probably.
But anyway, so yes, he has been cast as the voice of Ultron, which has put to bed a little bit rumors that Jarvis would become Ultron, but apparently people have just sort of shifted now that maybe part of the plot will be that Robert Downey Jr.'s character will somehow meet an untimely end, and his consciousness will fuse with Jarvis to become Vision.
That's
rumors. I'm not saying that that's what
I don't saying. Like. I don't like the rumors. We need to start new rumors. That rumor sucks.
No, yeah, I think it's very unlikely, but it is one of those rumors out there.
Why can't we go with just the regular storyline with Ultron being created by Ant-Man? So
well, along the lines of the rumors that are out there, though, there's a lot of rumors around Vision being part of the next Avengers movie and possibly having already been cast with Vin Diesel to play that part.
Wow.
And this was all derived from a Twitter picture that Vin Diesel had posted that he said, like, I forget what the caption was, but basically he posted this picture, I can't tell you about the meeting I just had or whatever, and he showed, but this picture says 1,000 words. And so he has this picture, and on the wall behind him there is a poster of, I think, the Avengers. You know, like some classic, you know, Avengers comic book poster or something along those lines. So people have sort of derived that maybe he has a role in the movie somehow, and that perhaps maybe he will be the Vision, either in voice or in actual bodily persona. But who knows? They could all be, you know, rumors at this point. Who knows what they're going to do with that? But there are some other casting things that they have come.
Elizabeth Olsen?
I know. That's still technically rumored, but they...
Wait, hold on. I just brought up the picture that in question.
Yes.
And it's a picture of Avengers number 2.
Right. Okay, that was it.
And it's, you see Iron Man on it,
mm-hmm.
Thor, Giant Man, and some villain who I can't tell in the middle of them. So, Space Phantom.
Mm.
You know, I mean, you have
so
to...
Maybe he'll be Space Phantom.
I was going to say, like, Vision isn't on this cover anywhere, you know? And
like I said, I want to point something out.
I want to point something out.
What's that?
I don't think it's ever been confirmed who's going to play Ant-Man.
No, you're right. I don't think it has. But
Vin Diesel be our Ant-Man?
Vin Diesel is Ant-Man?
I don't know.
They're not doing, at that point, they're not doing Ant-Man. They're doing, what was his name? The Wasp or... Not the one.
Yellow Jacket,
yeah. That would be Vin Diesel.
I would argue that if Vin Diesel is Ant-Man, he is not the Hank Pym version of Ant-Man. Possibly the Scott Lang.
Right.
That's right. Yeah.
And that was one of the rumors that they were going with Scott Lang and not Hank Pym.
Yeah. Yellow Jacket technically is still Hank Pym, I think. His alter ego.
Right.
But yeah, there's confirmed casting for Quicksilver for the new Avengers movie of Aaron Taylor Johnson, who is the main character, the guy who plays the main role in both the Kick-Ass movies. There's rumored casting that for Scarlet Witch, for the sister, will be Elizabeth Olsen.
Okay.
The little sister to the Olsen twins.
The little sister of the Olsen twins?
Yes.
Yeah, she's actually taller.
She's actually
than
done some respectable
both of them
acting
put together.
Roles.
Yeah, she's got more of a career than they do in acting.
Right.
But
I have to look this up now. Keep talking.
We're doing technical stuff, okay?
So those are some things out there. Well, like I said, the Elizabeth Olsen thing is still technically a rumor stage. I don't think they've confirmed it. Because all they've said so far about that role is that they'd like someone like, what's that girl from, that Hannah movie? Someone along those lines, because it's Eastern European. So, They're trying to follow that.
And just remember, none of those are mutants. Quicksilver would have been bitten by a radioactive thermostat.
What?
Well, you know, one of the old ones that has still mercury in it, because, you know, never mind. It's whatever they're going to have to do, it's going to be very complicated to just...
Well, yeah, I don't think they're going to go into
it would
deep
be a radioactive cheetah
stuff. I think that they're... My guess is they're going to be mutants, but they're just not going to address them as such. They're going to find some other way of explaining the fact that they have abilities. Metahumans or something along those lines.
Well, right, they just won't use the word mutant. They will say they are... handy capable.
Yeah. They're metahuman. Oh, wait, they can't do that. They're superhuman. No, that doesn't work. Well, that's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think the cast is fleshing out, but I think it could be interesting. I mean, obviously, we don't know much about the movie at this point, so it's hard to say. But another piece in Marvel news that we have not yet talked about that we can discuss is the fact that I want to say the X-Men, but whoever owns the rights to Fantastic Four I guess it is whoever owns X-Men. It's Fox owns both of those.
Right.
Have come out and stated that with the new... They're planning on rebooting the Fantastic Four, and with that reboot, there will be continuity to the X-Men universe. They've also stated that there won't be any evidence to that fact. They're just saying that it's true. Like, there will be nothing plot-wise that ties the two together. Like, you won't see anything in Fantastic Four that ties into anything you've seen
just take
in
the word for it.
Any X-Men movie to date or yet to come, and yet they are claiming that there will be continuity.
They're going to play the whole, you know, they're drinking the same soft drink as you saw in the other movie or something like that.
Right.
Game. Eh. Just once, I'd like to see one of these where, you know, the tie-in is you can see Spider-Man swinging between buildings in the background in one shot or something like that,
yeah.
You know?
Well, there something was supposed cool. to be a tie along those lines between Avengers and the reboot of Spider-Man, in that you were supposed to have been able to see the Oscorp building in the skyline of New York in the Avengers movie. And from what I understand, the reasoning that didn't happen had nothing to do with any failure on the licensing for that. It was just a matter of poor timing, that they didn't have the final modeled assets in time to put it into the production cut.
Poor excuse.
Yeah.
Give us what we want. We're fans. We want to see tie-ins. We want to see secret stuff in the movies. We want to see...
Yeah, we want Easter eggs.
Yeah. I want an Easter egg. 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 For anybody who remembers that.
Yes. Doesn't he, like, smash it in his hands at the end or something?
Yeah, something like that.
I'm trying to remember. It's been so long.
Bugs Bunny. Was it Bugs Bunny? It was Bugs Bunny.
It was Bugs Bunny, yes.
Yeah. I'll take 500. Yeah.
Alex, what's I'll take 500 on.
I'll take things only I know for 800, Alex. Yeah, how only I could mess up that joke as well. All right. So what else? What else are we talking about here?
Well, there's one more piece of casting news that I heard about recently that we can discuss, and that is related to Guardians of the Galaxy, that they've found a voice actor for Rocket Raccoon. Has anyone heard about this?
I saw it the other day. I don't remember who it was.
It was Bradley Cooper.
Okay.
So, and apparently that's official at this point.
Really?
Truly? I think so. Yeah, Marvel has officially confirmed that a new addition to the cast of Guardians of the Galaxy is Bradley Cooper, set to voice Rocket Raccoon.
All right, let's double check you.
I'm looking at a page on Superhero Hype right now from 2 days ago. So it's 3 days ago.
This seems like an interesting choice for someone to be a voice actor. You know, or people.
It, you're right.
Face,
it does
know.
Seem a little bit strange because he's got a face for the movies, so it seems kind of a waste. But
in fact, he played Face. Oh, sorry, I was.
Actually,
it's an interesting choice, though. I mean, it is. I have to. I definitely think he could pull it off. He's got the wit, you know, and the right personality. But
well, maybe the Vin Diesel rumors have been squashed because I think he has actually been officially cast as part of the Guardians of the Galaxy movie. He's doing the voice of Groot.
Okay.
Groot. Yeah, Groot's gonna be fun.
Yeah,
that makes the most sense.
It does.
Yes, and I inventors could pull off Groot.
Yeah, he could pull off Groot.
Sorry.
I do find it funny though that two of the bigger names they have involved in this movie are voice casting.
Well, I mean, but you know, Rocket Raccoon's also going to probably talk a lot.
True.
He's one of the main characters in the movie.
Very true. And honestly, Bradley Cooper does have a good voice, and I think it's a good voice pick for that. Because Rocket Raccoon does have to be dynamic. He has to, you know, he is a very specific type of character.
Yes, little creature, lots of personality.
Exactly. And Bradley Cooper can pull that off. So I think that fits. I just find that funny because they have someone who's, you know, entirely... You know, essentially unknown, except in television, playing the main character of Star-Lord know, in the form of Chris Pratt.
Right, right.
Who's basically, you know, if anyone even knows him at all, they know him from playing a goofy character on Parks and Recreation.
So. Right. And he's been, you know, let's see, Cursed Part 3? Never heard of it. Strangers with Candy?
That was a TV show, right?
Or
they made a movie, that's right. I forgot they made a movie of that.
Wanted. He was in Wanted, apparently.
Hmm.
Who was he in Wanted? That's a good question.
He was buried, apparently.
He was buried. Gibson's co-worker, best friend. Okay. Alright, so, yeah.
Small parts.
Jennifer's Body. I didn't see it, but,
Oh, good flick. Well, the writing was terrible, and the acting was horrible, but good flick. It was campy. It was meant to be the way it was.
Yeah. They were successful in their lack of good plot.
Does it have anything to do with Megan Fox?
No. Well,
no,
yeah,
it was,
but...
it was good in spite of her. She helped, though.
He's also going to be in the Lego movie.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, that's awesome.
Yes, and have you seen the previews for that? That looks really funny.
The Lego guys, they've been doing really good. There's the Batman Superman Lego movie, which was hysterical.
Oh, it was great. And it's funny that they've actually sold that as a DVD. And they literally took the cinematic scenes from the game and stitched them together in a movie. I don't think they added anything to it. Maybe 5 minutes of extra footage over what was already in the cinematics. But my kids loved it.
Was there any point in the game where you could actually play the game, or were you just watching that the whole time? Because I didn't play the game.
No, yeah, there's plenty of gameplay. So, like, those cinematics are, like, only maybe a minute or so long, you know, or I guess up to, like, 2 minutes long, because I think the movie's only 30 minutes long. And there's only 15 levels in the game. So, arguably, each cinematic was 1 minute of lead into a scene and 1 minute of lead out of whatever the last scene was. But then there's a level to play in the interim where you're doing stuff.
Cool. Did you guys see the, speaking of Lego and video games, did you see any of the video from the Marvel Lego video game coming out?
I have, and I have that pre-ordered because that looks awesome.
Yeah, I think one of the best parts... when they were at San Diego Comic-Con and they were showing the game to people, of course, as in any good Marvel video game now, you know, Stan Lee is in the game, and you can play as Stan Lee.
Nice.
But in this one, Stan Lee has a power.
Oh, does he?
He can Hulk out.
Really?
So you have a Stan Hulk.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it's the Hulk with gray hair and glasses.
That's weird.
That alone is worth the price of the game. I'm sorry. It's just, it is.
Heck, I might even buy it at that point. That's pretty cool.
Yes, so, I mean, everyone needs to run out and buy this. Make it the best-selling game ever so they will make more.
Well, yeah, like I said, I already have it pre-ordered, and I'm definitely looking forward to playing that when it comes out next month.
So, John, pre-order it.
Like, I have time to play games. I've got too many... I still have too many episodes of My Little Pony to watch.
I think your priorities are a little mixed up there, buddy.
And maybe, all that fan fiction to write.
I haven't even gotten to StarCraft, the second installment of StarCraft yet.
I actually bought that, and I didn't get even halfway through the tutorials before I put it down.
Really?
And not because it was bad, I just didn't have the time for it. I just sort of lost, you know, track of it.
Yeah.
I'm sure I would have enjoyed it if I kept playing it. But, yeah, it's just time. But yeah, with the Avengers game, though, not to jump off of it too quickly, the Lego Marvel Heroes game, or whatever it's called.
Marvel Superheroes.
I have marbles in my mouth now. Okay. Lego Marvel Superheroes. What's great about it is that they've actually put effort into making all the characters have unique powers and trying to, like, sort of like what we were talking about with Nerd Unemployed, about how, like, no games really seem to get those right, the varying powers of the different characters, because it's a lot to build into a one game engine. But, you know, LEGO seems to be doing better and better with it. Like, they've been growing exactly that type of thing with all of their LEGO games. You know, they did it with the DC superheroes by having Superman have, you know, his unique set of powers, and every other character having, you know, a version of their powers in the game. They also did it with the Lord of the Rings game that they had.
Yeah, it's like they're taking a bunch of blocks and putting them together in different configurations, you know?
Right. Yes, that they are. But yeah, the fact that they can actually come up with these specialized abilities, you know, and the fact that they do this, like, they've done so many disparate different types of games with these same engines, you know, with the Harry Potter games, the Lord of the Rings game, they have Star Wars, LEGO Star Wars games, and the DC games, you know, and they all, one, they're all building from each other as far as, in, you know, taking things to the next level. But they're also finding new ways of interfacing with the game. So it's not like they just took the last one and reskinned it. They're actually, you know, making an effort to keep these things unique and individual and playable and true to what you expect these characters to be able to do. Like, you know, they actually played off of, in the Lord of the Rings game, there's, you know, in, if you remember, it's almost a throwaway scene, but in the Fellowship of the Ring movie, there's a scene where they're walking through the snow in the mountains, and everyone is, like, waist deep in snow and shivering, while Legolas is standing on top of the snow, like it's with no effort whatsoever, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's a skill in the LEGO Lord of the Rings game, right, that Legolas can walk across these, you know, patches of soft snow that no one else can, that everyone else sinks into. So they've made that a gameplay element.
I mean, yeah, definitely. I mean, we talked about it in that Nerd Unemployed episode, right? It's like,
yeah.
You know, you play the Ultimate Alliance games, and it's like, you know, they didn't do such a great job of making you feel like you're Spider-Man or Captain America or Iron Man, because you're still, you're limited within the group, you're limited within having to stay with the group, you know. I mean, one of the greatest things LEGO ever introduced was the split screen, where player one can go in a completely different direction as player two, and...
And I'm so happy about that, because I used to play those games with my kids back when they were young, and they didn't have that, and you have no idea how often I found myself yelling at a four-year-old to stay close to me, because he's dragging me, you know, into danger somehow, you know, pulling me in the opposite direction on the screen. In hindsight, I regret that a little, but...
Just a little.
But that feature was definitely very helpful. Having that split screen was a brilliant move on their part.
Right, but I mean, yeah, so I play the DC one with my son, and I can fly off as Superman and fly around, you know, Gotham all I want. And he can be a Green Lantern and fly in the opposite direction, you know?
Yep.
You know, it's those guys, Traveler's Tales, really know what they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. With the new one, like, they've even shown in some of their gameplay videos, like, how they've really thought about those things. Like, there are challenges that you have to be Hulk to get through a certain thing, or you have to be Spider-Man to get through it, because it uses their unique skill sets.
Right.
And I think that's great.
Yeah, I mean, if you can just be any character and get through it, then what's the point of having the team, right?
Right, exactly.
So, that's due out October 22nd. So, this episode will be posted before then, and anyone listening, go pre-order it now. And we're not being paid by either LEGO, Marvel, or Traveler's Tales, so...
Though we will take checks if Marvel does want to, you know, slip a little something under our doors. Yeah, just...
I don't think you're going to.
Well, you know, you gotta let them know.
Fair enough. I have to remember where I pre-ordered it from.
Yes, because, you know, people refuse money from them all the time.
So... So yeah, that's all the movie-related and tangential game-related information I have at the moment.
Okay. Well, we never actually did an official intro in the show. We just kind of started talking, and you did your little...
That's fine.
Your thing. So
moment's gone.
Depending on how I edit it, we didn't really then talk about Bryan Cranston, you know.
All right, so let's get into it right now.
Okay.
All right, so apparently the rumor is dead that he's confirmed that he's not going to be playing Lex Luthor in the sequel to Man of Steel. But it doesn't mean we can't sort of speculate a little bit about that, because in truth, he could be saying that, but that might not be true yet, you know, because they haven't announced anyone else in place of him, so it could still be up in the air. So
you're holding out hope, I understand.
I'm not necessarily, just putting on the table that the what-if scenario, what if Bryan Cranston was signed for the role, you know, how do we feel about that?
Well, he's a good actor, you know, I mean, definitely he's proven himself, especially in Breaking Bad, and that's, you know, you could almost, in some ways, you could almost take that character and what he's learned about playing, I can't think of the character's name. The main guy in Breaking Bad, his character.
Right, Heisenberg.
Heisenberg. You can always take Heisenberg's, what he's learned from playing Heisenberg, and transfer that to Lex Luthor in some ways. You know,
yeah.
Had potential to be a good person, went down the wrong path, becomes a, you know, powerful person, mm-hmm. and, you know, uses that power corruptly.
Right.
Corruptly? That's not really
corruptly.
And
corruptly is a word.
And is obviously taking drugs because he still thinks he can beat Superman.
Well, yes.
Well, I know we posted this, but there was a pretty awesomely stitched together fan trailer that played off of that idea of Bryan Cranston in that role that I think, which I'm sure they drew a lot of clips of him from, and even vocals of him from the Breaking Bad series. And they really stitched that together really well and made a compelling argument for him, honestly. Like, if they were unsure of him in that role, I think that would help them cement it. And it has definitely influenced me a bit. I was definitely against it when I first heard about it, but I'm open to it.
But then the question I would pose to people, and it's the issue that I had, you know, is the age. You know, because he's much older than Cavill. And, you know, they went with an older Batman to play off the experience of Batman versus the new Superman. It was which should be an interesting take if they do it right. Now, to have a Lex Luthor that's 20 to 30 years older than Superman seems a bit off.
Maybe, you know? But how does that really play with, like, I don't know what the canon is, honestly. Like, how much, what is the age gap supposed to be between Superman and Lex Luthor?
Well, I mean, they've played with it so much in the comics, to the point where they were friends when they were kids in the comics, and then they played that. You know, they played
Smallville. They were like less than a decade apart, and things like that.
Right?
Wasn't that the original canon? Was that Lex Luthor lost all of his hair because of something Superman did, and that's
they played that way in Smallville. I don't know what the canon of that was prior to that.
Well, in Smallville, it was the meteor shower made him lose his hair, mm-hmm. and in Super Friends, it was Superboy was helping them with something, and he lost his hair. I don't think there was anything in the comics related to that. Maybe they did it, but I don't remember ever reading that in the comics. But
But
again, always though close within age. You know, at the most 10 years difference. So that was my only fear. It's like, you know, does it make it too much of an age gap for someone?
Right. Right. To go from, you know, characters that are generally considered to be about maybe a decade apart, to put them at least 2 decades apart.
Right.
That's a big jump. You know, so there is definitely some cause for alarm there. Although, if you think about, you know, how old was Gene Hackman when he was alongside Christopher Reeve in the original Superman trilogy, or quadrilogy? Not that we really care about that canon comparatively, but there was a decent age gap between them as well. So, it's not unprecedented, I guess.
Right, but that also, I mean, I think that also comes from the mindset of when they cast Gene Hackman, it was, let's get a quality actor to play the villain in the movie, you know?
Right.
And that's how Gene Hackman ended up with the role, I believe. You can go by that. You can say, oh, well, they did it in the original Superman movies. But, you know, hopefully we're not going to get a person that wants real estate as our Lex Luthor.
Yeah, no real estate tycoon.
Yeah, no real estate scams. No, let me sink California into the ocean or build my own island off the coast of...
Yeah, I think we've done that to death.
No, yeah, I agree. I think they need to go with the you know, powerful businessman angle version of Lex Luthor, the potential politician.
But that works if you're going with a self-made billionaire. You know,
right.
Then him being older makes more sense.
Right.
You know,
because he's been in business for a long time and also had time to be working on some other underground projects that you know, people may not be aware of. Things along the lines of like a Project Cadmus type thing.
Right, and it makes sense in that canon. If you go with the Smallville canon, he inherited the riches from Lionel Luthor.
Right.
And that's why they could be close in age at that point, you know. So it's debatable.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think they invented Lionel Luthor for that part, for that series, so that there could be some sort of... They wanted to show a path for how Lex would get to being that person.
Right.
They wanted to have an archetype of, this is the influence in his life, this is what drove him, you know, from being this likable character that you know now to the, you know, whatever... you know, future that he was supposed to be.
Right. So, given, let's say Cranston is out, and that's definitely off the table, who would you cast as Lex Luthor?
That's a tough one, honestly. Well, I've made my arguments in favor of Michael Rosenbaum. I think that he's a contender. I think he's the right age, honestly. I don't think he's too old for it, or too young for it, necessarily, either. I don't think so. I can't think of anyone else off the top of my head, though, who would be good for the role.
How about you, John?
I got nothing. I don't know. really, just let the, they should get the same casting director they got for, the original Batman or something. The Batman Begins. You never know what you're going to get. Gene Hackman worked out okay, but for, you know, he was still a little bit of camp. I want to see a dark movie.
Yeah.
Am I making any sense whatsoever, or am I just like spouting stuff at this point?
Slightly.
A little from column A, a little from column B.
Good. Well, then that's about normal.
Here's a casting argument I'll make for, the part of Lex Luthor. Michael Fassbender.
You'll have to explain that one.
Yeah.
So, well, you know who I'm talking about.
You'll have to explain that one.
Okay. Michael Fassbender, you probably know him from... He was in X-Men First Class as Magneto. He was in Prometheus as the android character. He's been in a couple other things. My point, though, and so... You know who I'm talking about, then?
Yes.
So I think that he has the acting chops to play that duality, that you know, friendly public face versus, you know, more sinister, you know, backroom face that I think is important to the Lex Luthor role. I think he has the chops for it. And... just based on his age. He was born in 1977, which makes him 5 years younger than Ben Affleck, but it also makes him about, you know, 5 or 6 years older than Henry Cavill.
Okay.
So I think age-wise he fits in that right range, and I think he could play the part. Granted, that might be difficult, because he's currently busy with at least one more X-Men movie. And who knows where it's going to go from there.
Okay, well, I definitely would throw Rosenbaum into the... throw his hat in the ring. I mean, he proved he could be Lex Luthor. You know,
he did make a good Lex Luthor, too.
Yes. But I would also throw a name in there as a curveball. It's an older actor, but he's proven that he can play a dual role many times over. And that would be Kevin Conroy.
Oh, really? Interesting. That's really freaking interesting.
Yeah, I definitely think he's a little on the old side for the part.
Right. I mean, I don't think he's much older than Cranston. Let's see.
1955.
Yeah, he's 57. How old's Cranston?
Yeah. You know what they could do?
Yes.
They could do just anybody for Lex Luthor, you do anybody for Lex Luthor, and then at the end you find out that it's not really Lex Luthor; it's an actor paid to be Lex Luthor.
Yes, Cranston and Conroy are the same age, so
okay.
If there was any truth to it, you know, that would work out in that respect. I think Conroy looks better at his age, but that's just my opinion.
It's because he plays the goddamn Batman, that's why.
But yeah, I mean, he's had how many years experience of, you know, and he's talked about this in a lot of interviews where one of the things he brought to the role was when he does Batman's voice, it's his own voice. When he does Bruce Wayne, he brings it up an octave or two. Why? Because Bruce Wayne is the mask, and Batman is who the character really is. So, you know, he really thought about that character. He brought a lot to it. And I think he could do the same thing with Lex Luthor.
Yeah, fair point.
So, yes, that would be my number two choice.
I've got no opinion.
You should be used to
once.
Thank you for elevating the debate.
I know. I mean, I'm only here to mock, you know?
All right, my third choice is John O'Grady.
You're saying that you're here to offer mocking or for us to mock?
I guess it goes both ways, yeah. Oh, wait, when I have an opinion, I have an opinion. It's just that, you know, they've made such bad decisions. We're talking DC here. They've got a lot to make up for.
That's true, and we've discussed that a lot lately in some of the episodes you have. But, yeah, you're right. They do have a lot of, you know, a lot to make up for. And I think, you know, like we said in the roundtable on the Batman Ben Affleck casting, our consensus generally was that we're all kind of okay with the casting. That it's not really him that's the issue. It's the fact that we don't know if they have any, if they've got a script yet. You know, if the writing's good and if the directing's good, then it could be good. But if it's not, which there's no evidence yet that they've shown us that it will be, then
yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, it's always sad when the fanfic is actually better than the actual movie script.
Yeah.
And that's happened time and time again.
Right. Speaking of actual movie scripts, there have been a number of... one of the sites I read regularly is a site called IO9, and they have lately posted a couple, you know, like, synopsises of some of the scripts that never came to be, and one of them was the Superman Lives script, you know, the one that was supposed to be with Nick Cage.
Oh, right. Boy. That was weird.
Yeah. And I read through that, the synopsis, and, you know, to one extent, I'm sure there was some summarizing they were doing for concision, but at the same time, they actually had some, like, direct dialogue quotes in there that they showed just to show how ridiculous it was, and it was horrifically ridiculous. Like if anyone has the time and wants to read something completely ridiculous, go to IO9 and look for, you know, Superman Lives plot points or whatever, and it was both kind of hilarious and kind of a relief that it never actually happened.
Interesting. I jumped on IO9, and there's something else here that looks like an interesting read. The Batman versus Superman movie of 2002 would have been the worst movie ever.
Yeah, they just posted that today, I think, and I started reading through it, but I sort of stopped. It was a lot to take in, because I had some comics to read. So.
Interesting. I'll have to look at this. But yes, was it the Kevin Smith draft that they were...
It wasn't his final draft. I think it was a revision of his script. But yeah, there was a lot of stupid, campy dialogue, and it was from a couple days ago that they they had posted it, or sometime like late last week.
Well, if we remember the timing, it was wasn't it around when Schumacher took over the Batman movies? So, I mean, if that's any, you know, if that's any indication, you know, you have to remember the time and when the movies were made and what was going on over at Warner Brothers in DC, and, you know, it shouldn't be shocking that the campiness was there, because apparently they thought that's what they needed.
Yeah.
You know, that's just, you know, I was going to actually say that Ben Diesel playing Vision is akin to Arnold Schwarzenegger playing Mr. Freeze.
Right, right.
You know.
I'm glad we already found other evidence that he's not likely to be in that casting role.
Right, right. So, but along those lines, right, like, I have to imagine that it was some of the campiest stuff. I mean, you know, I love Kevin Smith to death, but they asked him to write a Superman movie. I mean, that has to tell you something right there. You know, it was more along the lines of the cachet of his name at the time.
Yeah.
It was probably around the time of Chasing Amy. And, you know, his growing popularity, and it was like, oh, here's somebody pretty popular, let's get him to write it, you know.
Yeah.
But from what I've heard, and I've mentioned this on the podcast before too, is that, and Kevin Smith has talked about this, when they got Burton to say he would direct, he was like, oh, and Kevin's out.
Yeah.
So, you know.
But then with Kevin Smith, you could have had Affleck playing Batman anyway.
This is true. He had his opportunity.
Yeah. I'm just saying, you know.
Exactly. Probably wasn't as good as Nicolas Cage as Superman.
Right. But yeah, just to look up what I said was up there, it actually wasn't a recent article. What they posted recently was there's a teaser trailer for the documentary about Superman Lives. But in the text of that article that was posted on Saturday, there's a link that goes back to February article that they posted that dissected the actual Superman Lives script and drew it out, and it was kind of ridiculous.
Oh, so they have the teaser trailer for that documentary up already?
Yes.
Oh, cool. I have to check that out. I do want to see that. Guy spent apparently a lot of time putting this documentary together, but because Kevin Smith was talking about it earlier this year on Hollywood Babylon, and but he didn't say anyone had approached him yet to talk to him. So that kind of makes me curious. Like, did this guy just put the documentary together from existing clips and things that, you know, he heard through the windmill? Or did he actually try to approach, you know, Kevin Smith or, can't think of the director's name. I just said it. Tim Burton, you know, or what's his face? Superman.
Right.
Nicolas Cage. So did he try to approach any of them and say, hey, could give me 10 minutes to be in my documentary, you know?
Right. There's definitely, I think the teaser should, you know, plays a little bit of audio of Cage talking about the role. So either he drew from interviews that already existed of it, or he, you know, did actually get a chance to talk to him about it. But my understanding is that the whole movie was funded by a Kickstarter campaign. So it was very low budget. And he may not have actually talked to a lot of people in putting the thing together.
Okay, cool. I'm going to have to, I'll find it. I'll find the Ionine page, and I'll put in our Twitter thing and Facebook.
Right. Put it on the tubes.
For those out there interested in that kind of thing, you know, and again, there's plenty of pictures out there. If you want to see that balding head with long hair in a molded Superman suit, just search Nicolas Cage Superman and you'll find it.
Yeah. I think I've seen that suit too many times.
Though there are no shots of him in the... There was an Electro suit as well, which I assume was his healing suit, which is so funny because in the comics, that suit was just plain black.
Yep.
With a silver emblem on the front and silver, like...
No, see, that's because armband. They didn't follow that as the script. The script took a lot of liberties and came up with its own story. And like I said, I read through it. It is ridiculous. Like, there's this whole thing with, like, that basically the AI that Jor-El had created, you know, had gotten upset that he wouldn't let him, like, merge with some other intelligence module or whatever, because he wouldn't let him have a body, basically. Mm-hmm. And as punishment, this AI, which renamed itself to Brainiac, set in motion the destruction of the planet. And so Jor-El, to respond to this, you know, set in motion launching his family off of the planet, but only managed to get his son and this protector element called Kay out, you know, and across the galaxy to Earth. 30 years later, Brainiac finally finds his way to Earth with an army of weird, different aliens and, you know, monsters and things like that, and allies with Lex Luthor. There's actually scenes in this where Brainiac and Lex Luthor merge into a single being with two heads that talk with each other.
That sounds kind of familiar, though. Bruce Timm's story arc with Justice League actually kind of ended with Brainiac and Lex Luthor merging into one being.
Were they making lame, you know, punny quips at each other?
No, they were literally trying to kill everything that moved.
Okay.
Well, I have to imagine if you're a writer on those series and you're getting near the end of the series and you're looking for story ideas, someone goes, well, there was this idea from that unmade Superman Lives movie. Oh, let's steal that, you know? Yeah.
Yes, but unlike everybody else, Bruce Timm made it not lame.
Right, so, but the part of the whole battle between Superman and Doomsday is Superman was weakened because there was Brainiac and Lex had allied to put some sort of like satellite disc that was occluding some of the sun's rays enough that it weakened him, and therefore he could be like basically knocked dead, so to speak, by this monster.
I don't know. Some a part of me thinks that makes more sense than just this big beast coming out of nowhere and killing him.
No, the beast was brought by Brainiac. And then Lois Lane, for no explainable reason, drags him up to this place in the Arctic where he had seen Clark walk before and, you know, drops him into this crack that she assumes is, you know, somewhat beneficial. Drops his body into a crack in the Arctic. That happens to be where this K thing is, this protector element that was sent by Jor-El, that basically forms this weird silver suit around him that gives him his powers without him being fully powered.
Okay.
So basically it substitutes for his own powers by replicating those powers.
Can somebody check the number of listeners on our site? Because I think it's going down even though we haven't posted this yet.
I know. I feel that way as I'm saying these words. But you have to read. This is such a ridiculous storyline. It's so thankful that this never happened as a movie.
Okay, hold on, guys. This just in, as we're recording, this is not a joke. So, Nerd Unemployed is doing their own online magazine now.
Okay.
It's kind of cool. I'm actually on it right now. I'm going to post this as soon as we're done.
Mm-hmm.
And their first issue is September. And if you flip through to page 9...
Okay.
There's an ad for Superhero Speak.
Really?
Those guys? Really? Ugh.
This is so cool. So, we didn't ask for that, guys. Just so anyone listening knows, this is... Johnny just did this for us.
Nice.
This is really awesome. He did a really cool full page ad. It looks like a comic book with our logo superimposed. Get your weekly update on all things comics. That's what the face is saying, and then it has like, you know, available on iTunes, Stitcher, and has our logo and everything. It's cool. So
nice.
Johnny, thanks for doing that. That's totally awesome. We owe you.
Like I said, may assume you're getting a bill.
This is kind of cool. Looks like it's talking about all the first article is talking about all the next gen stuff coming out. This is awesome. We need to steal this idea, guys.
I don't think we need to steal this idea.
Oh.
It is pretty nice, though. I'm looking at it now that you mentioned it. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And this is how we keep listeners, by spending our podcast time looking at an online magazine and talking about it with no visuals.
Riveting podcast right. stuff.
Hey, if it works for CNN, I mean, you know.
They actually have a screen, though, where they can show you things.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Well, there will be a link to this so they can everyone can look read this magazine and listen along.
Definitely.
Sort
of like those Disney books where you hit the little record and it has a book, so you tell it and it makes a little twinkle sound when you have to turn the page.
The one I had was when I was a kid was He-Man.
Yeah. Well, I didn't have any of my own. My sisters had them, so they were Disney books.
Oh, okay. Your parents didn't like you?
No, not so much.
Okay. Or they just knew you wouldn't read.
Right. It was beyond me.
Oh, Ben.
I was above.
He just goes out inside and eats mud pies, so he doesn't need anything to read.
Right.
John's too busy playing with his horses.
I am not playing with my horses.
At the moment.
They're ponies. Gosh, get it right.
Do you dream that you're a pony at night?
No.
No, that's usually during the day.
Yes, while I'm trying to work. Good thing nobody at work listens to this.
Oh, no, they all do. I thought you knew that.
Yeah, right.
How many of your variable names are pony-themed?
I refuse to answer that question in that it may incriminate me.
But that just incriminates you alone.
Less so than if you knew the answer.
Perhaps so.
All right, I think this podcast...
All right, I think we've degraded enough that I think we should stick a fork in it before someone else does.
Before we get canceled. Because you know how you can cancel on that internet.
Right.
On that note, as always, listeners, don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week.
Hey everyone, you just listened to an episode of Superhero Speak. This is Dave. You can reach me at dave@superheroespeak.com. Also, if you're listening to this through the website, did you know you can go to iTunes and subscribe to it? So, check us out there.
And this is Ben from Superhero Speak. Reach your theories at ben@superheroespeak.com. And did you know you could also follow us on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/superheroespeak. This is John. You can reach me at john@superheroespeak.com. And if you want, there's our Twitter account @superheroespeak.
All right. Thanks, and check us out at those spots.